Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 60, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hey, hey, Peter from L.A.
Amy from L.A.
And Jonathan from the Savage Land.
And Jonathan is a new podcaster. Thank you for joining us this week, Jonathan.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a joy and a pleasure.
We'll see about how you feel at the end of the podcast. All right, this week we don't have really much in the news. Actually, I don't have anything really to report other than one of the networks has this an anthology of relationship shows. So, like, instead of The Twilight Zone where it's cool sci-fi every week, apparently it's going to be an anthology of relationships. I see that sinking and burning and dying very quickly. And the fact that the network delayed its premiere, it was supposed to premiere in the fall, and they're going to premiere it over the summer, tells me that the network also thinks it's going to crash and burn. So, yeah, don't hold your breath for that one. All right, I don't believe we really have any other news, so we're going to just move on to the shows. And the first show we want to talk about is the second episode of Game of Thrones. And we had a really lively discussion last week. This week we don't have that many people, but we have different people this time. So I'm curious to find out what you guys thought. So, Amy, you start us off. What did you think of the second episode?
Well, thought the character development is moving along nicely. I like what they're doing with the dogs, but I don't quite understand. They take them in. They say that they represent the Stark family, right?
Right, because that's actually the emblem. Like, each house has an emblem that represents the family. Like, the blonde people with the horses, their emblem is a dragon. The king, who is at Winterfell, his symbol is the stag. And the Stark family symbol crest is a dire wolf.
Okay. Then why do they treat them, my question is, why do they treat them so lightly? Like, don't you think that they would be animals that they revere? They're using them as scapegoats, and they just seem like not respected, like they should be.
Well, the Starks respect them. The king, his symbol is a stag, so he has no need to respect a dire wolf because he's not a Stark.
Okay.
But also, the dire wolves haven't been seen south of the wall in, like, hundreds of years. So it's actually, people don't know how to deal with them either.
I see.
So there's that. Which character so far do you really like? I'm interested.
I really like the poor boy who got pushed out the window in the first episode.
That's Brandon.
Yeah. I liked his character. He seemed like he could grow up to be something really noble, but now it remains to be seen what's going to happen with him. I haven't read the books.
I figured that. But, the cliffhanger of the second episode is Bran wakes up.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice parallel with the end of the first episode.
Peter, I know you did not talk about the first episode, so give me your real quick synopsis of how you think the character development for the first two have gone for you.
Well, I thought that I listened to last week's podcast, even though I wasn't there, and I kind of felt that it was kind of a big love fest on Game of Thrones. I love the production value. I think it looks great. It looks fantastic. And I really like Sean Bean. And the premiere I thought was good. It was mostly a lot of exposition, but I wasn't seeing, I guess what we would say is, I wasn't really seeing, like, the hook. Like, out of all the fantasy books that are out there, and there are many, there's tons of fantasy books, and I think, if I'm right, Game of Thrones did it start written in the 90s, Libya, is that right?
It was early 90s, I believe.
So I guess I kind of felt like...
It was late 80s, actually. But go ahead.
I guess oh, 80s, okay. So I guess I finally felt like, okay, so HBO, a decade after The Lord of the Rings, you know, hit the big screen, we're seeing a big lavish production from them for fantasy. And I guess my biggest problem was I was kind of like, well, it's good. It's not like it's bad or anything. It's obviously very well made. I guess I just have been like, I'm not sure, like, what's the hook? What is it about this fantasy story that's like, well, this is of all the big fantasy ones, this is the one that needed to be done. And I guess... maybe it's the wall. Maybe we're going to learn more about the wall and, like, what those things they've been keeping out for thousands of years are. Or maybe it's just the fact that I read this in one review that, like, most fantasy stories deal with younger people. Like, you know, someone who's in his 20s is going to become a warrior or whatever. In this fantasy, a lot of the characters are older, and so it's really more the politics involved and that stuff. And if that's what it is, that's not bad. I mean, I'm totally on board. But so I guess I would say I definitely liked it the least out of everybody here. But I mean, I still liked it. Don't get me wrong. It's not terrible. And I'm definitely on board. I thought the second episode was better. I think I'm still having issues with, I don't find the villain. And man, I am so, Libya and I have talked about this forever and I can never say, is it Cersei? Is that her name?
Cersei,
who was the actress from Terminator, Sarah Connor Chronicles, and she was also in 300. And I don't think, I know that you've said that she's an interesting character in the book, but as on the show, at least in the first two episodes we've seen, I feel like she's kind of just very one-dimensional. Like, clearly, I mean, clearly I would not trust her. Like, there's nothing about her that makes me go, oh, she's kind of interesting but sinister. Like, she's just, you know, she's not like, in other words, and I don't mean she has to be funny. I don't know, Amy, if you've watched, like, have you watched Buffy? I don't know.
Oh, I love Buffy.
Okay, like, the mayor. The mayor is an interesting villain, not just because he's funny, but you kind of see his side on things. Yeah. With her, I don't know. I'm just like, okay, clearly she's evil. I don't know why anybody would trust her, why anybody would believe the whole thing with the sword fight that happened with her son. And like, why would anybody take her side? You know, like, I guess I feel like I don't find that compelling, I guess.
Go ahead. Is she the one who was up in the tower with
yes, she's the one whose brother that she was having sex with pushed the kid out the window.
Okay, so
the Lannisters?
I don't know if it's just me, but I find it a little bit hard to follow in terms of, I couldn't figure out people's names at first because they didn't really say them outright a whole lot. I was trying to follow who's related to who. There's just so many characters.
Well, the thing is the people that were having sex and they pushed Brandon out the window was because they were twins. The two of them
Twins.
Yes, they're twins.
Right, Peter Dinklage is their sibling, but not a twin.
Right, he's their younger brother.
And I like him. I think he's a good character.
Right. And so the reason that they pushed him out of the window was, first of all, they're twins and they shouldn't be having sex. Second of all, she's married to the king. And so basically she's cheating on the king and they can't let anybody know that either.
Oh.
So that's why they pushed the kid out of the window, because he saw that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a huge... I mean, no, I totally got that.
Well, I mean, I know, but Amy said she was confused about... And I was trying to explain it to her. And basically, I understand why you're saying that you don't understand why people are listening to her. Well, first of all, she's the queen, so they have to listen to her to some degree. The second thing, you're totally right.
Yes,
the second thing is she's a Lannister, and the Lannisters are the richest family in all the Seven Kingdoms, and money buys you power.
So, but it never says that. They never have that in the exposition, do they?
No.
That they're the richest?
Well, actually, Tyrion mentions it, but he says it as an aside. He's like, I'm a Lannister. Have you heard the term rich as a Lannister? Like, he says it in passing, but they're going to bring it up more later.
Even if I didn't know if they were the richest of the Seven Kingdoms, they're clearly richer than Sean Bean's family. I mean, they're clearly more well. I totally get that the way their clothes are, the way they have a superiority about everything. Clearly, yes, I never thought that they were poor or anything.
No, but I'm saying that's why people listen to them, because they are the richest people in all the kingdoms and people have to listen. And she's the queen, and the brother Jaime is the head of the military. He's like the general.
Totally, you're totally right. I guess my thing is more like, I find it more interesting when you have, even if someone is clearly a villain, like the mayor on Buffy or something, like, I don't care if they necessarily have bad things on their mind or they just want power. It's more that I want to see their point of view so that as a viewer, I see why it's a struggle. And with her, I'm always just like, oh, come on. Like, why would anybody trust this person? Like, and I know you're saying, well, they have to because she's the queen. That might be true. Well, and then she's rich, but that's not interesting.
But the other thing
is, just kind of like, all right, she's
nobody,
a jerk.
But the other thing is, I don't see anybody trusting her. It's not like they're saying all these people
trust
her.
No, but they pretty much, the big scene with the fight about the prince, I mean, it feels like her word has this sway about what happened, and I feel, and also remember, the king has been portrayed so far as, you know, as actually not a jerk, as kind of a cool guy.
He's just like, oh,
and so you're kind of like, why would this guy marry her? That's, I'm sure, a political move. But why would he even necessarily, you know, listen? And I do like that in that scene, I think he does say something like, look, kids fight, who cares? Like, let's just move on, you know? Like, and I appreciate that that's coming from the king. It's just, it's always hard for me when I see a scene in a movie or television show where one character is clearly lying, but we're as a viewer, we know that it's a lie and we feel like this isn't, you know, I don't know. I'm going back to my thing. I feel like it's more interesting if I'm pushed and pulled as a viewer. If I'm like, ooh, I don't know whose side to take.
Well, how about this? The king obviously also knew she was lying, but he was put in an awkward position and he had to make that call. And his thing is, if I kill this dog, this problem goes away.
Right. So, I totally get his decision. Yeah, totally. I agree.
His whole thing was kill the dog, problem goes away, I can go back to drinking. So, so that was his easy solution, and he's not really thinking about any other consequence other than if a dog dies, no one else is fighting, the end.
You know? Right. I agree with you there.
Okay. I think it's nice about Sean Bean's character to see that he's not really enjoying doing the killing, the execution, rather.
Right, because he feels it's his responsibility.
Yeah, like, he didn't take any pleasure in cutting off the poor guy's head at the beginning of the first episode, and then obviously he didn't really want to kill that poor dog.
Right, and though, to be fair, wolves. Remember that they're dire wolves. Sorry. That's very important.
Wolves. Poor wolves.
Right.
Actually, we have a lot of them in the Savage Land, actually.
But I do want to reiterate, I know, Peter, you're saying that you're not feeling some of the characters yet, such and such, but part of the thing is also what Amy is saying is that there's so many characters.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I agree with Amy. I keep calling him Sean Bean or Boromir because I'm kind of like, oh yeah, he's Ned Stark. Like, I you're right. I totally forget people's names.
I was calling him Boromir the whole time.
Yeah. Like, what is Boromir doing in the Middle Earth right now?
So he looks like Boromir, just with slightly darker hair, and he's put on a little weight.
He's older now. But I will say, look, as much as I'm saying that I'm not as much the love fest, I still clearly think it's appointment television. There's no other show on the air that looks like this thing. I know so many people who got HBO in the last week because of Game of Thrones. So, I mean, it's a definite like, oh yeah, Game of Thrones. I'm just saying, it's not like when Lost premiered, and pretty much from the first episode of Lost, and I don't want to get into whether or not Lost was a failure. I'm just saying, in the pilot of Lost, I was like, oh my God, what happened? Like, I wasn't feeling that. That's my only thing.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of show. It builds on you. It's like a book.
Yes, you're right.
And a book has the prologue, it has the build-up, and you got to give it a little time, but I guarantee you, because I do know it's going to happen, you're going to love it. That's
all. Oh, I'm sure I will. Totally sure I will. So,
looking forward to seeing what happens with it.
All right, next.
Yeah, me too.
We have to move on because we spent a lot of time on this. So let's move on to The Killing. So
Killing, we all watched it? I watched it.
No, you guys go ahead. I didn't see it.
I think we're
on
episode...
Has your boyfriend watched it? Jonathan?
No.
Oh, all right.
I watched The Killing.
All right, so...
I've heard someone talk about it.
I don't think that counts. So yeah, now we're on the point where everyone thinks it's the teacher who killed the girl. And I think I told you this earlier, but I will reiterate here. Because I know that the teacher is a red herring, I'm like 100% sure... If the teacher's the killer, I would really be surprised. But I'm like 100% sure that the killer is not the teacher. So spending the entire episode looking for evidence to prove that it's the teacher, it was like a yawn fest for me because I'm like, it's not him. Stop it. It's not him. Let's move on to whoever it might be. So, but I mean, I think the character development stuff was interesting. And the partner who, you know, I loathe and hate with Power of a Thousand Suns.
Who I like. You my ride, Linz. You my ride.
Whatever. Hate him. And this week they gave us some more background on him. Apparently he's taking money from something.
Right. Look, he was saying that he had a windfall from gambling, but obviously that's not what it is, right? It's something else.
Of course it's something else because he was obviously lying to her.
Right.
And then he hands the money off to some woman who's got a kid. So it's like, oh, that's his kid. And so he's paying money off to his baby mama or whatever. And I'm just like bored now. I can't stand him. There's no other way to say it. I just can't stand that guy.
I like him.
But I will say that the... and then Lindsay's fiance showed up again. And he was a weird combination of an understanding boyfriend and a jerk at the same time. So, I don't know where they're going with that.
Well, see, now, what you talk about not liking the partner, while I like the actor from Battlestar, I have nothing against the actor, I still don't see that my biggest criticism of... If my criticism of early episodes of Game of Thrones is I don't see the hook, my criticism of the killing, and I also like the killing, and also a really good-looking production, you know, for a cop show or whatever, is I don't really know why this story needs to be told that the main character... Lyndon is getting married and she's supposed to move in a day or two, but really she's supposed to, you know, she's leaving her job and now this kid. I don't understand why you need that at all. Like, why isn't it just a story about her? Maybe put in she got a new partner, or for you she doesn't because you don't like him, but like, I don't understand what it's not the fiance's fault. He's a fine actor. I don't see how this relates to anything. That's my biggest criticism of the show.
They're trying to give her character development, but I think they get a fail on it.
And they don't need character development because she's actually just an interesting actress.
Oh, yeah. Like, I enjoy watching her. I didn't love her
in the first episode because I was kind of like, she's so quiet. I don't really know what's on her mind and everything. But I will say, I really like her. I think she's a good – I think she's smart and interesting. So I don't think she needs cheesy back – I don't think she needs that kind of subplot. I think she's I think the actress brings enough to it that it's not necessary, if that makes sense.
Okay, now the question of, now that we've seen this episode, has your opinion on who the killer is changed? Or have you formed...
Well, I mean, I think my speculation, and I think it even came from yours, is that I think the senator to be, the senator-elect guy's assistant, if she's not the killer, it feels like something's going on. Except that in this episode, the guy that's his little mole, he keeps pushing her. I think her name's Gwen. He keeps pushing her. That makes me think, well, now that you have a character pushing her, maybe she's not involved. Maybe, you know, so...
Yeah,
I want to say, though, going to the speculation, one thing I really did like, it's a small little scene, is after they go, there's a scene where the parents go to, they basically, I think they bring the dress.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They're on their way home, and she's been so depressed and so, like, and obviously, I mean, hey, you know what I mean? But her little kids think that, you know, they got that great opening where the kid goes to get milk, and he's leaving this terrible neighborhood. He's, like, going to the grocery store. The other kid wets his bed, and the one kid is just like, our parents don't care about us anymore. They only care about Rosie, and she's so down. So you finally, they're coming back, and she's kind of like, hey, she looked beautiful, didn't she? And she's kind of happy, and the husband is not really much of an emotion. And then he goes in the, I think he, what do they stop at, like a auto shop or something like that? And he just like breaks down, like he's just, and I thought that was really good. I thought that really showed like, you know, this married couple that like, they obviously have the same things on their mind, and it's so hard the way they're dealing with things, and even though they love each other, that doesn't mean that they're going to relate to it in the same way at the same time. And right. I thought that scene was really good. So as much as I'm ragging, and I agree with you about who cares about the teacher, that was a really good scene. So I thought that was pretty powerful.
I agree. I think that his problem is he feels that he needs to be the rock of the family and be strong, and he hasn't really taken an opportunity to grieve, and it just all hit him at once. And I was like, yeah. All right, that makes sense. Okay, I want to move on to Stargate Universe. Amy, you generally watch it, but you didn't watch this week's, right?
Yeah, somehow I thought that it was a repeat. I usually go by when my DVR says new or not. I guess I can't trust that.
Yeah, this week's episode was part two of the part one episode last week, you know, when they found this whole civilization based on their, not alternate selves, more like... Well, it's sort of an alternate timeline. Like, the alternate timeline version of themselves got sent 2,000 years back into the past.
And I love alternate timeline stories.
So it's kind of cool. So they meet this whole civilization all based on them. So they are the ancestors. And then they have the problem of, should we help these people or not? And they kind of feel like they should because they're kind of their great-grandchildren. So it's a weird kind of place to be in. So they have all these people on their ship. And they take them to one of their other colonies, and they get there, and it's all covered in ash. And so this whole episode was, there's this database, and it basically shows them their alternate lives, because they had the Kino recordings of all their alternate versions, and everybody got paired off, and everybody had kids, and so they got to see, like, oh, Eli ended up pairing off with such a nurse, it was like some corporal. So Eli ended up paired off with a corporal. Everybody else paired off. Everybody had like 10 children. But the big revelation was, like, TJ ended up getting a... She had a disease, and it's genetic, which means that this version's TJ is going to get it. And so she... It was actually a really good sort of emotional moment where she realizes that she pretty much only has 5 years to live. And... She's, like, really... Like, they're in the middle of a crisis. There's lava coming in to destroy the city, and everybody's trying to get out of there, and she's quietly freaking out in the corner. But I thought, dramatically, it was really well done, and her relationship with Young is really good. Like, they haven't really touched on that in a while. But because their alternate selves got married and had, like, two kids, now they kind of feel this connection again. And I like it. I mean... I do like the Lucian Alliance guy because he's actually paying attention to her, but I really do like her and Young better. So
they were their own grandchildren, you're saying?
No, they're not their own grandchildren. Okay. They were watching the videos, the keynote videos, and they watched themselves have full lives. They watched their alternate versions get married, have kids, grow old, all that stuff. So they saw the recordings of basically... a skipped forward version of their lives. They found out that TJ died from a disease that is genetic, which means that this version's TJ, the one in our time, well, sort of our timeline, that she's going to die from the same thing. So she was quietly freaking out about it.
That reminds me of a Star Trek episode, actually.
So, but, well, yeah, the same, it's not quite the same writers, but yeah. I'm not surprised, but it was still pretty good. I really enjoyed it, and we only have, I think, like one more episode, and it's been wrapping up, and it was really depressing that the show's going off. But anyway, let's move on. This week's episode of Glee. What'd you guys think?
I came home. Go ahead, Amy.
Oh, I loved all the songs in this, and the feeling of what is it about yourself that you don't like, and all the songs that they chose. Just so fitting.
Except for the only thing about the songs, I didn't like Kurt's song because it was from a musical that I don't know and I have problems.
What musical? What was it from?
I don't know. But it was from a musical. I could tell it was from a musical. I don't know which one it was, but I find myself irritated by musicals. I love musicals if I've seen it, but if I haven't seen it, for some reason it irritates me. No explanation.
I came home and my wife was finishing up Glee, so I saw the big Lady Gaga Born This Way, the big song where they all have the t-shirts, and I was kind of like, oh, what's going on here? And I liked that, and then I went back to watch the beginning of it, and then I don't think it was a bad episode, but somehow I kind of lost attention, and I ended up stopping it, and I didn't finish it, so unfortunately... I haven't seen the whole thing. I thought it seemed okay. And one thing I was curious about, and you guys could tell me, is it seemed like, as I recall, because Kurt was at the other school, but at the end of the episode, it clearly looks like he's back.
Yeah, you missed the big thing was Santana decides she wants to be prom queen, and she goes through this whole machinations in her head to figure out how to do it.
Oh, I did see that, and then she looks at the football guy, and she sees that he's looking at another guy. I saw that part.
Right, and so she figures out that he's gay, and she also figures out to use that as motivation to get him to be her king, prom king, and they'll do the whole, we're both gay and in the closet, and we'll keep each other secret, and if we get Kurt back, then I'll be a hero, and I'll definitely win the votes. So it was
What does he say about that?
Oh,
he doesn't like Kurt.
It's not that he doesn't like Kurt. He's afraid Kurt's going to tell his secret. But because she knows, her big threat is, if you don't do this with me and be prom queen or king, then I'm going to tell your secret.
Tell everyone you're gay.
Yeah, she's like, I'll tell. She's like, if you think you're going to intimidate me and scare me, not going to happen. She's like, I will tell everyone in this school and everyone I have to tell your big secret if you don't cooperate. And so she gives him basically the script to be apologetic to Kurt, and they have this whole intervention, and he apologizes, and all of a sudden Kurt doesn't buy it. Kurt's like, you're lying, tell me the truth. And so he finally tells him it was all Santana's idea. And then he was like, brilliant in her Machiavellian, he said how Macbeth of her, or something. So Kurt appreciated the fact that Santana did it for her own reasons, and then he was like, okay, that makes sense. So Kurt came back because they came to an agreement.
So oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So I thought getting him back was done well and in a believable fashion. So I'm glad Kurt's back. So, yay.
I like the storyline with, was it Rachel? And her potential nose job.
I felt that was too trite.
Really?
Yeah, because I was pretty, like, I appreciated the idea, and I think it's an important idea to get out to tweens. Like, if you're 12 or 13, I think it's an important message to say, to be happy with who you are. And I think generally that message is actually good. But I never for one second ever believed she was actually going to get a nose job. So
I liked, yeah, because I thought how could they possibly pull that off. But right. I liked the rendition of Unpretty. I think that's actually the prettiest version of that song that I've ever heard.
I thought it was done very well. I agree with you. I did like the song. I'm not arguing with that, but I guess I was just kind of bored with, is she going to get a nose job or isn't she? And I'm like, no, she's not. I don't believe it. But I do think that as a young person, the message that the episode gave was a very good and important lesson for people to hear, especially in the world that we're living in now. I thought that was very important.
And especially when Lauren became kind of friends with Quinn.
Oh, by the way, that was evil. That was super, super evil. Like, I never thought Lauren would, because, I mean, that was straight up mean. To put that picture everywhere around the school, that was uncool.
Yeah.
I've always liked Lauren. She got major negative points for that.
Who's Lauren?
Lauren is the heavy set girl who...
Oh, I like Lauren.
Yeah, I know, but what she did in this episode was really, really mean. She found a picture of Quinn from her earlier, like, junior high school, where she was overweight and had braces and glasses and...
Pimples and...
Yeah, she looked pretty bad. But Quinn now, of course, looks pretty. And she took that old photo and put it all over the school. And I was just like, that was uncool, man. That was not a good thing to do. So she did eventually apologize for it, but I felt it wasn't sincere. I didn't really feel that apology. But, you know, negative points for Lauren on that one. All right. Overall, I thought the episode was okay. It wasn't the greatest one, but it was all right. You know, I wasn't as bored as Peter was. But let's move on. The next show we want to talk about is Justified.
All right, you got 5 minutes. I'm out.
Okay.
Because I don't want Justified ruined for me. So
yes, Peter is on season one of Justified, and we're talking about...
On the last disc. It's really good. So.
Yes, and we're on the second to last episode of season two, so equally good. All right, so while Peter bows out, I will talk about it really quickly. Did you see it, Amy?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I have to say that building up to the finale, I don't know why I didn't see this coming, but wow, I can tell the finale is going to be incredible. You know, I mean, this episode itself was okay, but it's all about the buildup. Everything is building up to a fantastic finale where we're finally going to have the Bennetts versus the Givens in an all-out kind of shootout.
It's going to be a Wild West showdown.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't, because there was that moment where I actually thought Raylan was going to kill him. He had the gun to the back of his head, and I was like, really? He's going to do this? And he talked himself out of it. I was like, oh! And now he's in trouble because now he's got all the Bennetts against him, and he's pretty much by himself because, I mean, Arlo is not that much use, and he's not going to go to Arlo for help. The only thing I can say... think of is if Boyd Crowder helps him, which I like when the two of them are teamed up together. I really do. So I figure that the Crowders and the Givens are going to have to team up against the Bennetts. Mm. That's my call.
Mags, she's a Bennett, right?
Yep.
She scares me.
Oh, she's fantastic. Like, if that was my mom, I would need therapy.
Like, big time.
Oh, at the funeral, remember when, what is her name? The girlfriend? Ex-wife? I forgot her name. When she looks over and she sees that Raylan already has a tombstone and she's like kind of freaked out. I thought that was kind of cool because, I mean, his thing is he already knows where he wants to be buried. He's already got his tombstone. He's good. So I thought that was telling about as much as he talks about he wants to get away and he wants to not be in Harlan and all this other stuff. At the end of the day, that's where he wants to be buried.
And it's sort of ominous. Well, more than sort of.
Yeah, I know, especially coming into the big shootout that we're going to have next week. But, yeah.
Do you think they're going to kill him off?
No. I mean, no. I really hope. Though they have, like, set everything up to be completely wrapped up where he's not really accepted into the Marshals anymore. I can't wait for next week. They've set everything up in a really fantastic manner, and I can tell that finale is going to be incredible. So
someone's going to die.
So yeah, someone's going to die. Yes, that's very true. I said that this week, and I was almost right. But yes, next week, someone's definitely going to die. And it's just a matter of who, and I think it's actually going to be multiple bodies. That's my prediction. All right, so next show we want to talk about is Big Bang. What'd you guys think?
Well, I think it's a little funny how Sheldon is uncomfortable when all these different girls want to dance with him, but that's Sheldon.
Well, I mean, Sheldon's uncomfortable with people in general, so I don't know if it's necessarily confined to just girls. But there you go. Oh, and they finally did the thing which I think we've been talking about for weeks. They had a girl kiss Sheldon. It's like, and the world didn't implode. He looked very startled, though. And I liked at the end when she's all drunk and she's like, okay, tell me what I did. And he gave a rendition of everything that happened. And like her question was about the monkey or something. Like he gave like this whole list of things that she did. And she was like, so was the monkey all right? You know, I liked how, oh, they decided to use a theory of quantum something to reverse their relationship back to a point. Oh, reset like a computer reboot. So they're like, we're going to reset to the most favorable condition that we both agree on. So they're going to basically ignore the whole incident.
Well, that's what they're saying. I'm assuming we're eventually going to get more of that. But you're right. That's what they're saying right now.
Right. And I actually think that Amy Farrah Fowler is hilarious drunk. I like her.
I got to say, I feel like, you know, the show's in its fourth season now, and I feel, and even though I'm a huge sitcom fan, sitcoms are probably my favorite more than dramas, but or one-hour shows or whatever. But I have to say, I feel like, I don't know, it's like the pattern or something of Big Bang Theory I haven't loved it as much. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some good episodes, but I will say, I definitely feel like I like Farrah Fowler, Penny, and who's the other girl?
I don't remember.
Bernadette.
Okay, there you go.
I like hanging out with them more than the original characters now, if only just because they seem fresher. I don't know what it is. Like, I really like that. I like them with Sheldon going to the dance. Like, I like them, you know, getting the drinks. I thought that, I was like, oh, it's pretty funny. But, like, hanging out with Leonard, I was like, yeah, it's okay. You know, like, I don't know why, you know.
Well,
so
boring anyway. So I haven't liked hanging out with Leonard, like, ever. So if
no, I like Wallowitz and
I like them too, but Leonard is boring.
I mean, definition. Leonard technically his whole point of character is he's not the funny one. He's the bigger characters react, I guess, you know.
Right. So the fact that we were spending time with him and Priya, who I really don't like either, means that, you know, it's not going to be as entertaining.
Oh, I did like when she went through the roommate agreement in the beginning. Actually, I didn't mind that. That was all right.
Well, that's funny because she's the only person who's ever put Sheldon in his place. So
right. So, although he did that whole countdown thing was pretty funny.
To self-destruct. And did you, okay, sci-fi geek moment. The code that he put into the computer as his access code is Captain Picard's.
How did you see the access?
Well, because he does it. He's like, he says the code. He's like,
oh,
access
that's right.
Code.
He does say it. No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
but I did notice he said something
B.
about Star Trek episode.
Yeah, he's like 11A2B, whatever. And I was like, oh, that's Picard's access code. That's hilarious. So I was like, whatever geek looked that up to put that in the script, you get points because I recognized it. Or I don't know if that gives me points or takes them away, but I thought it was hilarious. All right, what did you think, Amy?
I'm still on the whole Sheldon kissing thing. I like when they asked him, have you ever kissed a woman, Sheldon? And he said, yes, my mother and my sister, of course.
So, oh, and then some woman at a cotillion or something
it was a nun. He
oh,
gave
nun,
a nun.
Oh, nun, you're right. Right.
That's what I'm saying to on the subway or something.
Right.
Yeah, so that's, so they're like, yes, no, you have not kissed a woman. So that was all pretty good. I don't know if he... what did you think of Sheldon's reaction to the kiss? Like, after she kissed him?
Well, it was more the fact that she threw up afterwards. this in no way is an indication of you, blah, you know, so...
Yes, that would kind of sour the experience. That's very true. All right, so I thought the episode was good, and I think they're actually developing Sheldon's character in an interesting way, so I'm happy. All right, next up was The Office. It was the big goodbye episode. I have not seen The Office, so I'm going to let you guys take it away.
I liked the episode, but I wanted to say, and I know Jonathan has seen it, the episode the week before was the is basically the Dundies, and it was mostly a comedic episode, mostly, but at the end of the episode, Michael comes, they basically are like, oh, you know, why don't we go back to the office, because something happens where they get kicked out of the restaurant, you know, whatever. So they go back to the office, and they end up doing a rendition of the big song from the Broadway musical Rent, and I have to say, it caught me completely off guard. And I found it very emotional. I was really like, wow, he's so sad. I was like, Michael's going to be gone. And they're doing this song about, like, all the things that all the things we've seen over this, you know, 6 or 7 seasons that the show's been on. And I thought that was really good. Now, Jonathan, you saw that episode too, right?
Yeah, I saw that episode. I really liked it. I liked how they handled Dwight's reactions to everything, how he's kind of became more civil with Jim because he's becoming more pissed with, like, just the office in general.
Right, he's becoming much more of the disgruntled worker, which we all knew he had in him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he just, like, throws his Dundee in the trash.
Right, because he's like, I like to this to all the trash, the trash men or whatever, the association, he throws it in the trash receptacle. Yeah. Wait, what have you thought of Will Ferrell? Because he's been in all these episodes.
I liked him. I thought he was funny. And I mean, I'm going to want to see him, like, being in it regularly, but I think he's been really good, like, in the role that he's been doing so far. Just being kind of the straight man to... He's, like, the straight man to Steve Carell, which is kind of weird because he's usually not the straight man in the roles he picks. And I just like how he's just... I actually really a little disappointed because I wanted to see him talking to Creed. And I haven't seen that.
Oh, actually, you're right. That hasn't happened. Yeah, that would be funny.
I'm waiting for him to go, like, what do you do? Yeah. I like when they went to Meredith's house, and it's just, like, all this pigsty. Like, I thought that was, like, Creed was going to get, like, a Dundee nomination. And then that was, like, Meredith's house, just total mess. Well, after she walks the walk of shame at, like...
Right? Yeah. She's cheerful about it.
Yeah.
I would agree. I mean, so the episode that was on Thursday basically was, you know, I'm sure you saw the commercials for it. That actually was the last Steve Carell episode. And I guess it's certainly not a bad episode. I mean, basically the plot is that Michael is leaving. He tells everybody he's leaving in 2 days, but really he's leaving only in 1 day. So in the episode you're seeing, which was an extended one, it was actually his last day. So he's trying to say goodbye to everybody without them really being too emotional because they think that they're going to see him the next day. And it was good, but I will say I didn't find it as emotionally, you know, gut-wrenching as when they did that Rent thing in the episode that you saw. Because I guess part of it was that I wasn't expecting it in the episode before. You know, in a weird way, it's almost kind of like the episode itself where it was like, you know, you think you've got this much time with Steve Carell when it's really this much time. And I liked... The very last thing is that, you know how, Jonathan, since you watched The Office, you know how, like, the concept of The Office is that they're being recorded. It was kind of one of the first shows to do that, right? So they've, so if they go somewhere where the camera can't follow them, we don't get to see what happens. So the last shot of Steve Carell is he's going to an airport security, and so he has to take the microphone off. And that was pretty good. And then he takes the microphone off and he says something and then he mouths because we can't hear him. That's what she said, which I thought was pretty funny. And then he walks off and Pam catches up to him and, you know, says goodbye or whatever. But yeah, I would say the episode you saw, which was the one 2 weeks ago, I actually found that way more like hit me in the guts than this one. But again, this was not a bad episode. It wasn't like terrible. It's not a bad send off. And clearly for Will Ferrell that you were saying, they showed a promo at the end of the episode, and now we're going to see Ricky Gervais is coming, Jim Carrey, and there's somebody else. They have got, like, a lot of people are going to be on.
Yeah, Catherine Tate from Doctor Who.
Wait, what?
Catherine Tate. She's one of the people coming to the office.
Oh, I don't know if they showed that in the promo. I said, that's awesome. I can't wait. But I can't wait to see Ricky Gervais, because he was on The Office earlier this season, but it was like, you know, it was like for 30 seconds. It was so short.
Now I remember reading that, I guess, like, Steve Carell was originally going to be in more episodes of the season, and then the writers decided not to have him leave the season earlier. Like, so it could have been like there's kind of rushed that last, like the last few episodes, like they condensed a few episodes together because they wanted the audience to be able to, instead of like going, oh, next season without Steve Carell and then no one watching it, they wanted people to watch half the season with him and then get used to the idea and finish the season off without him being in the show at all. So they would just be watching it.
Yeah, and it's not a bad idea, except that what's weird is that it's weird that they haven't, whoever the new boss is, they haven't cast that person, at least that I know of, they haven't cast that person. So these last three episodes, which are going to be the you know, these more celebrities and everything, which I'm totally looking forward to, I'm still not sure as a viewer how that pulls me in for next season. I almost feel like, or and maybe they are doing this and maybe it's a secret, I almost feel like whoever the next the real replacements for Steve Carell should still be in this season, so that we get to know that person and go, oh, that would be kind of.
I think that's the point. They're introducing these characters to see who the audience responds to and who the cast responds to and how the writers like them. And they're probably going to base it also on ratings. So, like, if you bring in this one actor and he gets along really well with the cast and the writers like him and then the audience like him, then that's who it's going to be. This is like, it's like a bizarre job interview.
Yeah, but none of the celebrities are going to be like Ricky Gervais and like Will Ferrell and stuff. Like, none of them, Jim Carrey, yeah, they aren't going to stay on for the whole season. So,
well, that's what I'm saying. If it wasn't those names, I feel like Libya's thing would work better. Like, okay, yes, Sharon Tate from Doctor Who.
Catherine Tate.
That part of me is like, wow, maybe she'll be the new person. But, like, Jim Carrey, there's no way Jim Carrey is going to be on The Office as a regular. So it's kind of a weird, like, there's no suspense. I don't think that would happen at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's like whenever there's a celebrity, like, love interest for any character, I'm like,
yeah,
it's just a rock. So like, oh, no, it's not the
whoa,
last.
Whoa, guys, you're talking at the same time. I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
And actually, what I wanted to say is we need to wrap this up. We need to move on. I was going to talk about 30 Rock, but we're running out of time, so we're going to skip it. We're going to go on to Vampire Diaries.
Woohoo!
And Amy, do you watch Vampire Diaries?
No, but I know I should.
Yes,
Amy,
you should.
Do you have a television?
Yes.
Do you like good television?
I do. I love good television.
Oh, yeah, it's better than that Game of Thrones. Yeah, I'm saying it. Better than Game of Thrones. I'm saying it.
Oh,
is it about, like, 12-year-old, like, vampire girls?
No,
That's what the commercials would make you think. That's not. It's so much better than that. Like,
well, as you will see in our discussion right now, because we're going to talk about it, and you will see how serious this show is and how complicated.
Oh, and funny, though. It's good. It's everything. It's got the whole mixture.
Well, this week wasn't really that funny. This week,
no, not really. But, I mean, they have. But Damon can be funny. There are moments.
Damon is charming and funny.
Yeah.
But this week's episode was more. We're getting to. We're building up to the finale. I think we only have like a couple more episodes to go. You got your big bad. He's building his big spell to destroy the world, but not really. But I mean, he's building his big spell and he needs people to sacrifice. So, of course, he kidnaps two of the main characters to sacrifice them. And I'm like, all right, they're not going to be sacrificed. But the thing I like about the show is I was thinking maybe one of them might have been.
I thought that too, because technically the show has killed off main characters. It does happen.
Yeah, I know. So I was like, okay, one of them might die. And then they actually did kill someone in the semi-main character, because I was like, wait a minute. Wait, are they dead? Well, the aunt.
Well, she's not dead yet.
Yes, she is. She's in transition, which means they killed her.
Oh, wait, you're right. Oh, snap, witch. You're right. They did kill... No, yeah, you're right. You're totally right. Yeah, she's dead. And what's interesting, because you and I have talked about this before. I've always thought she was the weakest character on the show.
Right, and I said you have to make us care about her before you kill her. And then they're actually, I think they're doing a weird reverse thing where they're killing her first to make us care about her.
Right, to make her, they're making her into a vampire so she can be sacrificed.
Right. So I'm not sure how she's going to get out of that. But then I was like, do I want her hanging around as a vampire? Because that'd be weird. Like, but it would make her interesting. And that's part of the problem with her character so far, is she's been the least interesting character. But now if she's a vampire, now she's interesting.
I think the key to liking, here we go. Earlier in the podcast, I was saying that I don't understand what the hook of Game of Thrones is, even though I like it. What I think Vampire Diaries has is, yes, there are tons of books and everything about, you know, vampires in love, and there's always some girl that's special, not a vampire. Yes, there are tons of those books. The thing I kind of like about Vampire Diaries, and I didn't really notice it until the second season, although I guess it was there the whole time, was in the world of this writer, it all kind of comes down to spells and stuff. And it's kind of an interesting take. Because remember, that's basically the big thing, is that, because I think it's that he's the main bad character, is technically both werewolf and vampire, but his werewolfness has been, I guess, put on mute, I guess.
Yeah, because the witches decided that would make him too powerful, so they took it away.
So I guess I feel like what's kind of cool about Vampire Diaries is that a lot of things that they do in the show, the reason is it's usually some kind of spell. And the spell, of course, you know, spells come from witches. And witches technically are just people, as we saw in this episode when the one got shot in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, the witches.
I like that hook. To me, that's a hook. That's like, okay, that is an interesting way of putting all these these kind of supernatural characters together. You know, like one of the big things in Vampire Diaries is that vampires can walk in the sun. Why can they walk in the sun? Well, they have a magic ring. Yes, technically, when you say magic ring, it does sound really preposterous.
Can all the vampires walk in the sun?
No, you have to have that special ring. Like, but in the pilot, when I heard about the ring, I was like, really, a magic ring? That's. But I will say it's consistent in the world, so it works.
Are there a lot of rings? Or just
to be clear, not like, say if I'm a vampire and I have a ring that lets me walk in the daylight, if you take my ring, it doesn't work for you. The ring has to specifically be made by a witch for you to walk in the sun.
So the rich vampires have rings?
More like the older vampires.
The ones that basically have good connections with witches.
Right. If you're just a vamp that just got turned to fledgling and you don't know anything, you don't know anybody, you're staying inside during the daylight. So there are few vampires that have rings, but of course the main characters that we're following are the ones who have rings.
Also, now, is Buffy in this?
No. And also beyond the spells, of course, are usually made out of, like, not only incantations, but also, like, chemicals. There's also the fact that they have this thing called Ravain. And so Ravain is this kind of material. And in this episode, Catherine, who is a vampire, she is supposed to kind of pretend that the main vampire has control over her. And, of course, he has to test her. So he tells her, like, oh, I want you to go stand in the sunlight, right?
But, oh, by the way, it's Vervain with a V.
Oh, Vervain.
Right.
But not anyway. Ravain. So she has to, like, prove that, of course, because she doesn't want to let on that she's really not, you know, under this guy's spell. But again, it seems consistent in the world. It's all, like, it's something that I'm like, okay, it's something that, for me, any kind of magical or whatever world has to have. Yeah, I guess in Star Wars, it'd be like the Force. You have to have this one thing that it has rules, there's things about it, it's not completely malleable, but it allows for more things, and they do that in Vampire Diaries. And I guess to me, that's why it's much more interesting than like the Twilight series.
Oh,
or,
yeah,
like,
and it's more adult. It's made for adults, even though the commercials don't let you know that. But what I was going to say, talking about this particular episode, I like the fact that they did the shock value of Damon trying to figure out a way to keep Elena alive. His big solution is to give her vampire blood, so when she gets killed in the sacrifice,
then she'll become a vampire.
I was like, that's a stupid plan. And after he thinks about it for like 5 minutes, he was like, oh, that was a stupid plan. Because Stefan points out, he's like, she didn't want to be a vampire. You crossed the line, which means she's not going to forgive you. And for a vampire not to forgive you, that's a really long time.
Yeah, that's hundreds of years. Yeah, also, I like that the characters discussed it. Stefan and Elena, they discuss the whole idea of, like, her being a vampire. Has she ever thought of it? Have you ever? And he's like, of course I've thought about it. I like that, because normally when you do that on a television show, it's brought up as new information. And this time the characters are like, well, yeah, of course we thought about that. You know, of course. But that doesn't mean it was the right plan.
Right. And I like that once Damon realizes his mistake, he spends the rest of the episode trying to make it up to her, trying to fix it, to the point where he's willing to die just so that so she doesn't have to become a vampire.
Right, and actually, come to think of it, why does, did I forget, why, oh no, that's right, I just answered my own question. Because near the end, so basically Damon is like, okay, I'm going to get rid of the sacrificial vampire and werewolf. That way, there's no way that he's going to be able to do the ritual, which means that by the time they do, a month later, because it's got to be with a full moon, the blood won't be in her system, and she'll, you know, she won't be turned into a vampire. And he's wondering, why didn't he just sacrifice me? He didn't sacrifice because, as we saw, a huge cliffhanger, he got bit by a werewolf.
Right, which means that he's dead. Dunk, dunk,
dunk. Which means he's dead.
Yeah, the only...
Well, actually, he can't be dead, because he's one of the main three characters, though.
Well, I mean, anyone on Vampire Diaries can die, except for Stefan, Damon, and Elena.
Right? Yes, I would say that's right.
Everybody else can die, and so now that Damon has a werewolf bite, we're like, okay, so he's dead. Because I like the fact that, what, it was like 6 or 7 episodes ago, we watched another vampire die really slowly from a werewolf bite. So we know, and they went through the whole thing of, let's find a cure, how are we going to cure her, blah, 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 blah. And at the end of the day, there was no cure. So we went through all of that already. So it's kind of weird, like, all right, we already tried to cure a vampire of a werewolf bite. That didn't work. Oh, the only thing I think of, we now have originals. We didn't have originals before at our disposal. So the only thing I can think of is maybe Elijah knows something that can cure it.
I love that you say at our disposal, like you're on Team Damon and Stefan. you're part of the Scoobies or something.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you got to be part of the Scoobies. But the big cliffhanger is they're about to do the ritual. Elena's got vampire blood in her, so if she gets sacrificed, she's turning into a werewolf. Her aunt has already been turned into, not a werewolf, a vampire. Her aunt has already been turned into a vampire. Oh, except that for her to be a full vampire, she has to kill somebody. So where are they going to get some random citizen for her to kill?
Well, what do you mean? They're in Mystic, they got tons of people. They can just grab somebody. They can do that easily.
I swear Mystic Falls is just like Sunnydale. Like, people go right. missing all the time. It's so crazy. Yeah, so, I mean, they left it on a great cliffhanger. Because as soon as you see that Damon's been bitten by the werewolf, you're like, oh, crap. So, that was great. All right.
I was just going to ask real quick. In this universe, if a vampire gets bitten by a werewolf, he doesn't... Wait, no. What if a werewolf gets bit by a vampire?
A werewolf gets killed. He's dead. The end.
Yeah, they both kill each other, basically.
Yeah.
And the whole point is that a vampire is pretty powerful, and so normally if a vampire finds out you're a werewolf, when it's not a full moon, they'll just snap your neck and kill you. However, if they actually are a werewolf and it's a full moon, they're more powerful than vampires. That's why vampires would hide then.
Well, and also a single bite from a werewolf kills a vampire. It just kills them. So a werewolf can still lose a fight, but if they nick you, you're still dead. So
right.
that's why you don't want to do that fight. All right, next up, I want to talk about Supernatural. The episode, this actually was... By the end of the episode, I pretty much had the exact same reaction as I did at the end of Vampire Diaries, which was, aw, crap, because we're leading up to the finale. So doing a really good build-up. Did you see it, Amy?
No, but I do know that a lot of my friends did, and they are disappointed with their favorite show.
What do you mean, this particular episode?
I think so. Like, they don't like the direction they're heading. They're like, I'm going to go back and watch some season 3.
Well, no, I mean, I thought this episode was fantastic. They killed Eve, which was surprising that they killed her this quickly. And I actually liked how they pulled it off. It was actually, I've seen this move before. Oh, wait, actually, I saw it on Vampire Diaries. That's funny. The way they killed Eve off was a Vampire Diaries move. But, so they kill Eve off, and so you're thinking, all right, this episode's pretty good. And they've been showing that Cass has been going a little dark side, and he's been, he, like we saw in the last episode that he lied to Dean. And so you're kind of like, all right, so he's lying to Dean. What's that about? What's going on? And then you find out this week that Crowley is still alive. And we had seen Crowley be burned by the, like, Cass had his bones and burned him. And so as far as we knew, Crowley was dead. Though, actually, now I think about it, I heard, never mind. I interviewed Mark Shepard, and he made a comment that I thought he was joking, and now I realize he wasn't. So now we know that Crowley is back, and that Cass lied about killing Crowley. So that was all fake. That was all smoke and mirrors to fool the brothers. And so you're like, what the heck? What's going on? And you find out at the end of this episode that Cass is working with Crowley, which I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what the heck? And that was pretty much, that was the last scene. And Dean doesn't want to believe that Cass could be dishonest with him. And that was like, that was that whole scene. They had a really quick scene with Dean and Sam and Bobby, where Bobby and Sam were like, is there something going on with Cass? It's weird. Maybe he's, do you think you could be working with him? And Dean totally doesn't want to believe it. He's like, it's Cass. Of course not. But then there's like that doubt that they put in their mind. So I don't know what's going on exactly, but for some reason, Castiel feels that he has to work with Crowley, and I have no idea what's going on, but it's building up really nicely. And last week, Cass killed another angel to protect his secret that he's working with Crowley, which I'm like, dude, that is way over the line, you know? So I don't know what's going on exactly, but I do find it interesting. I don't have a problem with Cass going a little dark side as long as the explanation of why is interesting. And next week, when in the preview, what they showed, it looks like it will be interesting. Like, they actually have, they have Cass praying, and he's talking about why he's doing what he's doing. So, I'm excited. I thought it had a really good ending.
Woohoo.
So, why are you not watching Supernatural? You're not watching
okay.
Vampire Diaries or Supernatural?
I know. They seem like shows that I would be watching. Well, mainly, since I haven't seen them from the beginning, it's kind of like with Peter and Justified. I really want to start from the beginning and not spoil myself for later seasons. Like,
Well, I mean, that makes sense. Yes, I would recommend you start it from the beginning, but I'm still, my question is, why have you not done that? That's all. But, you know, take your time. It's okay. Yeah. All right, so the next show we want to talk about in Slash Show, we're going to talk about is Fringe.
That was good. It was good. I was a little nervous. The setup was that in the last episode, Peter was kind of in a coma, and then he wakes up in this episode, but we don't really quite know where he's going. I've been, you know, been getting excited because there's only one more Fringe episode left. And in the last episode, Peter was kind of knocked unconscious because he figured he would touch the big machine, and it, like, it, what did the guy say? The bowling guy?
It repelled him or something?
It repelled him. It's almost like it's being defensive or something.
Right.
And of course, we know that they used the blood of the baby, right? That's
right.
What they did?
Right.
But I thought, yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, I feel like sometimes so much of the science mumbo jumbo goes over my head a little, but I mean, I was, you know, I really loved the show. So, and I, you know, and I gotta say my favorite part was probably more, even though the end is, I really love the end, but there's a scene where, basically Walter is at Peter's bedside and he's in, Astrid is like, look, we gotta move. We got this new information. We gotta get going. And he's just like, I'm not going to leave Peter. And he's like, are you crazy? Peter would want you to do this. Look at Olivia. She cares about him. And I really liked that Astrid toughened up, was like, look, man, you gotta get going on this. Like, I like that balance that they have. I mean, Astrid's, I think, one of the unsung heroes of the show.
I agree. I really agree. Astrid is a great character. And it actually annoys me that they use her better in the alternate universe than they do in our own universe. So
really, I always think in the alternate universe, she almost seems like a weird savant character. Like, she doesn't have a personality. She just has all this information.
Well,
I
that's
find her
true, but they actually use her, and she gives valuable information, and she's part of the plot. And I sometimes feel like the Astrid of this universe is a glorified, assistant. So she just goes and gets coffee, and she doesn't really help.
She is an assistant. You're right. There is the assistance, but clearly, I mean, and we saw, and I think it's in this season, there's that episode where Walter gets so afraid that something's happened to Astrid. I mean, he clearly, I guess these characters care more about each other, whereas I feel like in the alternate universe, yeah, you're right. I guess Astrid is more, like, job-wise, she's more powerful, but I don't really feel like there's a lot of warmth with those characters.
That, yeah, I would agree with that, but
yeah, I guess that's why I like our Astrid, if that makes sense.
Well, I just saw the potential of her in the other
universe. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so the big cliffhanger, do you want to say it?
No, you go ahead.
Well, actually, wait, the cliffhanger of the episode was that Peter goes in the machine, and then he wakes up, and it looks all messed up, and there's police everywhere, and he's seen a thing that says September 2011, and in my head, I was like, kind of sighing, because I was like, oh, is this going to be a third dimension? Like, it's like, it's a third alternate dimension. But it wasn't. It was, as we see from the promos, he's now 15 years in the future. So there, I was like, oh, what does that mean? That could be interesting. We see that there's a, you know, where the Twin Towers is, there's this weird super building that they've built, right?
Right. I felt we were in Terminator land. I was like, are we in Terminator? Like, what just happened?
That's why I thought it was an alternate universe.
Oh, okay. No, I did think we were in the future because as soon as he sees that plaque, I was like, oh, we're in our own universe. But
oh, that's true. You're right. Yeah, good point.
As soon as he saw that. But I did think that I liked that phrase that Olivia actually sent through the typewriter. What?
Be a better man than your father.
I was like, is she talking to Peter? Or is she like, what is she trying to say? Like,
I, you know, Julia thinks he's talking to Peter. I was thinking it might have just been to herself because she also has a terrible father.
Yeah, except that be a better man. She's not a man.
Oh, good point. Yeah, you're right. Then it has to be for Peter.
Yeah, but it seems like she's doing it right in front of Walter, so it seems kind of an insult. That's all I was thinking about.
No. She doesn't mean Walter. She means Walternitz because he's the real father.
That's...
She means that's, be a better man than what your real father is, who's the evil, well, kind of, you know, he's the
I don't know, best. That's like crossing, splitting hairs on that one, but all right, I still thought that was odd.
I think Walter and Walter are pretty different.
He's from the Walter is the alternate universe.
I call him the Walternate.
Yes, and they call him, like the fans came up with the name Walternate, and then they started using it on the show. And yes, the fans came up with the names Faux Olivia, and they started using it on the show, and I was like, I love it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, Walternate is actually, I think what they've been showing is Walternate and Walter are actually closer to the same person.
Well, yes, you know, you're right from what we've seen, but from Olivia's point of view and even Peter's point of view, not necessarily, but I see what you're saying. Yes. I mean, cause when the faux Olivia is like, you know, look, I'm not comfortable killing billions of people. His response is, well, that's because you don't have... You know, I don't have the luxury of that. Like, I had to be pragmatic. It doesn't look like he really wants to kill the other universe, but technically he's still doing it, you know, or trying to.
Right. Yeah, I still, Walternate is still scary. I do agree with you on that.
Like, actually, to me, going back to Game of Thrones, to me, Walternate, he's a good foil, as opposed to what we'll eventually probably see with, I mean, hopefully what we'll see with Terminate Sarah Connor in Game of Thrones, where I feel like Walternate is clearly seen as an imposing presence. He's even from the first time we ever see him, it's just like, oh, this guy's like, you know, he's power hungry and all that stuff. But you're right. We have started to see more shades of him as the show's gone on.
Well, and that's actually a testament to the actor, Noble, yes. Because he plays the kind of fool character of this Walter, and then he's intimidating. As Walternate, he's scary.
Yeah,
that's really impressive.
And he even kind of gets scary as Walter sometimes when that weird side of him comes out. And remember when he would kind of boss around Astrid? We're like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, but not as scary as Walternate is like really scary. So
I agree. Actually, I just thought of this. So Vampire Diaries and Fringe. How many shows do we have where there's like weird doppelganger characters? Like how many alternate? You know, like there's so many. It's like a lot of these actors do double duty these days.
Well, what were you saying, Amy?
Like three of them. You said that in Stargate Universe too.
Oh, Stargate Universe does that also.
Yes, because it was alternate timeline. And were you not listening to my conversation? Apparently,
no. Because in case I ever watch it, so I didn't want to ruin for me.
Oh, okay.
So wait, they also have an alternate universe? Because in Stargate,
it's alternate timeline.
Because then, as I recall, Stargate, at least the original show, the wheel basically takes you to a different part.
Really change. It's called the Stargate. That's why it's called Stargate.
Exactly. It sounds like you're saying Are we seeing a different Robert Carlyle in a different universe?
Not yet. That happens way at the end. There's something that happens that creates two destinies, two ships, and one ship ends up going to a different place, and at one point we do have two of everybody. Yes.
Oh, kind of like John Crichton in
Farscape.
Yes, Farscape.
Yes. It's very similar, yes.
Okay.
Except that in that one he was cloned, but you're right? No. I don't remember now. Anyway.
Wait, was he cloned?
I don't remember now.
It's been so long.
It's like, anyway. Yes, he was, because that's why they couldn't tell the difference, because they were both the same. They were identical.
Oh, right. You're right. Yeah.
They were split. Anyway, that wraps up this podcast. That was a weird, bizarre wrap-up for the podcast, but that wraps us up this week.
Next week we'll have Doctor Who.
Yes, because we recorded this on Saturday afternoon before Doctor Who is aired. Last week we made a special exception and recorded it on Sunday so that we all could have seen it, but that doesn't work with my regular schedule. So we will be a week behind or something like that for Doctor Who. Much apologizing. But that means I have that to look forward to this week. Yay!
Hey, wait, Amy, just curious.
Yes.
You are a fan of Amelia Pond, right?
Yes, I like her. I thought that, what was your question?
No, that's it. That's
all. All right, before we get into that discussion, let me finish my wrap-up. If you have any feedback, hit us up at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at tvcampfire, and we are on Facebook. Talk to you guys next week.
Later.
See ya.
Bye.